The last ground test of a shuttle booster has been run by ATK. The Air Force says KCX is a model of defense procurement reform. And NTSB says a Skymaster lost part of a wing in flight. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, February 26th, 2010. A line of cars, one observer likened to a funeral procession, moved through a foggy morning in Promontory, Utah yesterday as drivers watched the final ground test firing of a solid rocket booster made by Alliant Tech Systems for the Space Shuttle program. Even as workers looked on with pride at the 244th consecutive successful firing of their company's product, the moment was bittersweet. The Ares 1 program was expected to provide employment for many ATK workers after the shuttle fleet retired this year. But the decision by the Obama administration to scrap Ares means that employment at ATK's facility in northern Utah, which peaked at 9,000 at one time, could be down to 1,200 after the next round of layoffs in May. For now, a September test firing of the Ares 1 remains on the schedule because the new federal fiscal year doesn't start till October 1st. The revised final RFP for a new aerial tanker released this week by the U.S. Air Force is being held up as a model of defense procurement reform. It's described as highly detailed, with 10 times the mandatory requirements in the earlier RFP. Deputy Defense Secretary William J. Lynn III explains that laying out all the requirements up front, rather than tacking them on midstream, will guard against cost overruns and program delays, a scenario which notably plagued development of the now-scuttled VH-71 presidential helicopter. The RFP also accounts for costs and effectiveness beyond the initial purchase price, which drew a critical response from Boeing yesterday. But Lynn says of the pressure from competitors, quote, "We are resisting that buffeting, and we are going to play this straight down the middle," unquote. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board has issued a preliminary report on a Cessna 337 Skymaster that went down at Monmouth County Executive Airport in New Jersey February 15th. Confirming what at least one witness reported, the plane lost part of its right wing during a low pass over the runway before rolling and veering right, hitting the ground, and sliding and rolling till it finally hit a snowbank. Five occupants, including three members of a family visiting from Poland, were killed. The board notes the plane was equipped with aftermarket wing tanks installed under an STC. Sections of the right wing spars, left wing spars, and horizontal stabilizer structure have been sent to an NTSB materials laboratory for metallurgical analysis. Up next on ANN, Boeing puts a third Dreamliner in the air. Should voice recorders be used for routine checks on sterile cockpit compliance? And SpaceX's Falcon 9 is standing upright at Cape Canaveral. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for February 26th. I'm Paul Plack. Boeing has a third Dreamliner in flight test now, but it's aircraft ZA-004, the fourth plane to be built. It's been leapfrogged ahead of 003 because the types of data it's collecting are needed quickly for development and certification of the 787-9. 004 departed Payne Field in Everett, Washington at 11:43 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesday. The three-hour flight, with Captains Heather Ross and Craig Bomben at the controls and other flight test personnel on board, ended with a landing at Boeing Field in Seattle. Ross said 004, quote, "operated flawlessly today," unquote. She'll be the chief pilot for 004. That first flight reached 30,000 feet and 255 knots. The revelations about idle chit-chat in the cockpit of Continental Connections Flight 3407 as the plane was slowing to stall speed last year, has led to reasonable questions about whether sterile cockpit violations are the exception or the rule. Cockpit voice recorders would hold the answer, of course, especially now that their duration of recording is about to increase from 30 minutes to 2 hours. But the recordings are only heard if an investigation is deemed necessary, and that's due in part to agreements between airlines and unions. Now, the NTSB is encouraging both to make use of the recordings routinely. Pilots' unions are not amused, asserting that pilots should be entitled to privacy even while on the clock in an airliner cockpit. Some safety advocates warn of unintended consequences if pilots feel anything they say could be used against them. But we'll certainly be hearing more about it. Among the fans of the idea is Representative James Oberstar, chairman of the House Transportation Committee. A much-anticipated launch in Florida is getting nearer. SpaceX's fully assembled Falcon 9 launch vehicle, topped with the Dragon qualification spacecraft, now stands vertical on Pad 40C at Cape Canaveral. The launch is scheduled for March 22nd and could play a major role in this summer's debate between proponents of the Obama administration's new direction for NASA and federal lawmakers fighting to preserve NASA-dependent jobs in their local districts. Earlier this month, the Orlando Sentinel talked with an aerospace executive who was not an authorized spokesman and was told, quote, "If they go down the tubes, we all go with them," unquote. A failure of the launch could provide ammo for those who argue the Constellation program is a better bet to return Americans to space after the retirement of the shuttle fleet. Still ahead, airline passenger revenue in the U.S. ends a 14-month losing streak. Southwest stock clerks reject a Teamsters contract deal. And here's the coolest merit badge camp ever. You're listening to AeroNews.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, February 26th. I'm Paul Platt. The Air Transport Association of America, which counts most major U.S. airlines among its members, says a streak of 14 consecutive months of declining passenger revenue finally ended in January. ATA says revenue rose 1.4% versus the same month in 2009. About 0.4% fewer passengers traveled on U.S. airlines, sampled in the report in January, but the average price to fly 1 mile rose 0.6%, the first such increase since November of 2008. Growth was strongest on transatlantic routes, where passenger revenue rose 3.4%. The airlines also saw cargo revenue ton miles rise 17% year over year in January. That's welcome news after a decline of 11% for the full year 2009. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters reached a tentative contract agreement with Southwest Airlines on behalf of about 170 stock clerks who manage the airline's parts inventory, but the ratification vote has failed. Not much in the way of contract details have been leaked, but the Washington Post reports the deal had given the clerks wage and benefit increases in exchange for work rule changes Southwest wanted. The old contract became amendable on August 16th of 2008. The new one would have become amendable in August of 2013. The airline says it will continue to negotiate in good faith, quote, "to seek a contract that is in the best interest of employees, our customers, our shareholders, and our company," unquote. And finally today, if earning your aviation merit badge as a Boy Scout isn't cool enough, how about earning it at a camporee at Kermit Week's Fantasy of Flight in Florida? That very opportunity will be offered for the second consecutive year, March 5th through the 7th, to help celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Boy Scouts of America. The experience will combine primitive camping with a chance to commune with real aircraft mechanics and restorers, and the boys will also get to try their skill in simulators including hot air balloons, hang gliders, and a Corsair fighter. Before becoming an aerobatics champ, airplane designer, and children's book author, Weeks himself was a Boy Scout, and says of the camporee, quote, "I want to encourage these young men to push their boundaries and strive to be all that they can be," unquote. The cost for the camporee weekend is $28 plus tax per scout. and that includes admission, specially tailored tours and Scout Merit Badge stations, activities, campsite, and lunch on Saturday, all for about the standard single-day adult admission price. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, two CEOs with little in common talk about their jet development programs. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.